Now, I want to look at some potential PAYE failures. We start with the payroll. Do we have any students paid without deducting tax under the P38S procedure? Should they have used the P38S procedure? Was the work done in the holiday time when it would apply, or in the term time when it wouldn't apply? Do you need to check that? Are there any other situations where a no tax code has been used for an employer or director? Do you have any evidence to justify that no tax code? Have you got a P6 from HMRC? You need to check that if you're not deducting tax from anyone. Do you have any evidence to justify no national insurance being deducted or reduced national insurance being deducted? Again, the sort of thing to carry out as an end of year check before you start to do the end of year returns. Category X for national insurance means no national insurance. But who would it apply to? A 15-year-old under the age to attract national insurance. Someone coming from abroad. But do they have a certificate of coverage from where they've come from to justify not paying national insurance? Another end of year check for national insurance, directors. Directors have a special basis for paying national insurance. It's called the annual earnings basis. But most directors pay normal NICs. So that means when you get to the end of the year, you've got to check to see, did you deduct enough national insurance from the directors? Do they have any bonuses in the year which might affect the national insurance? Did any director leave during the tax year? Because if they did, the national insurance should have been recalculated and checked. Okay, that's payroll. What about the nominal ledger, the purchases? Do we have any self-employed individuals who really are not self-employed? The other week, I looked at some invoices and I saw an invoice for Mr. A. £1,800 to professional services for 1 month. And the following month, exactly the same, £1,800 to professional services. Well, the question arises, what were the professional services? What were the contractual arrangements? Was Mr. A genuinely self-employed? Something else you might find within the purchases nominal ledger system. Are there any taxable expenses there? Is there a taxi account with Computer Cab or someone like that? Are people having taxis from home to get into work, from work to get to the station to go home at night? I'll talk a little bit more in a minute about late night taxis, but are there taxable taxis going through the purchase system which have to be reported? Are there hotel bills paid direct by the company to the hotel? Are they business hotels? Or was someone staying at a hotel near their normal place of work because they were working late? Or perhaps because they were out on the town in the night? Potentially a taxable benefit that has to be reported. Then we move on to petty cash, which can be something of a nightmare when it comes to compliance reviews and checking end-of-year returns. Do we have any round sum allowances or per diems that are paid through petty cash and where there's no dispensation? Because any round sum allowance or per diem allowance, for example, when someone's working overseas, has to be covered by a dispensation. Otherwise, the expenditure has to be receipted and detailed to justify the business deduction. And what about non-receipted expenses? HMRC, when they carry out a compliance review, will be looking at directors' and employees' expenses. If they see claims for expenses, £10 for taxi, £10 for car parking, this type of thing, and if it's on a regular basis and there's no receipts, they may challenge this and argue that it's not an expense, but that it's a round sum allowance that should have gone through payroll. Something that probably should have gone through payroll was mobile phone top-ups. happens all too often. Somebody makes a claim, often through petty cash, £10 a month, £20 a month, £30 a month, just for mobile phone top-ups. If the mobile phone is a company phone, then it may not be taxable, and providing that the top-up receipt can signify, can prove that it's a company mobile phone, it may not be pursued. But if the company is simply making a contribution towards an employee's use of their own mobile phone, a sort of mobile phone top-up, it's going to be liable to tax an NIC. It should go through the payroll or perhaps into a PAYE settlement agreement. For people working in the London area, Oyster cards. Is an employer paying a top-up on a regular basis for the use of someone's own Oyster card? If the Oyster card is registered and the journeys are recorded and matched to the expense that's claimed, not a problem. But if they're simply claiming £30 a month Oyster top-up, PAYE and NIC will be sought by HMRC. I mentioned mobile phone top-ups. Another point that often crops up is an employer making a contribution towards an employee's home or mobile telephone bill. If the employer pays the whole bill, or perhaps 50% of the bill, HMRC will want income tax and national insurance on the rental element of the personal phone and on the calls, unless they're identified as business calls. So again, a potential failure which perhaps ought to be adjusted for the PAY or P11D returns. In expenses, again, expenses are going to be reviewed. Cash reimbursement for home-to-work travel will be regarded as a payroll item, pay as you earn, and national insurance. If it's a personal item, like home-to-work travel, if it's cash reimbursement, and indeed cash reimbursement for other personal expenses are going to be sought, pay as you earn, national insurance, perhaps a P11D benefit in kind, if the reimbursement is done through a company account. Another major potential pay-as-you-earn failure that needs to be considered at this time of year, before the payroll year-end returns are finalised, is have there been any tax-free termination payments? Termination payments come under different headings. Compensation for loss of office, redundancy payments, payments in lieu of notice, ex gratia payments, payments in commutation of pension rights. You might say, what's in a name? But to start with, you have to say that you cannot assume that the first £30,000 is exempt every time. Contractual payments are liable to tax, and their earnings for NIC's purposes, they're taxable within Section 62. They're not within the exemption provisions of Section 401. If they come within the exemption provisions, the tax limit is £30,000. If they're non-contractual, there's no £30,000 limit for NICs, so it could be £130,000, tax-free on £30,000, NICs free on £130,000 if it's a non-contractual payment. Now, in terms of the types of tax repayments, HMRC will always try to tax payments in lieu of notice. Is there a contractual entitlement? Does the contract say that the employer will make a payment in lieu of notice? If it does, it's liable to tax an NIC. It should be on the payroll. If the contract only provides for a period of notice, HMRC may still argue that the payment is an emolument if the employer habitually, or perhaps always, makes a payment in lieu of notice, so that perhaps the employee could sue for non-payment. But that's something that you need to take advice on. If a restricted covenant payment was made during the year, it's fully liable to tax and NIC. So the mistake that could arise is that someone receives a non-contractual genuine compensation or redundancy payment, and it's less than £30,000. But if included in the amount they receive is, say, £1,000 to cover the restricted covenant within the contract, that £1,000 is fully liable to tax and NIC, irrespective of whether they received more than £30,000 or not. Garden leave payments. If someone is told, because they've resigned, go home, go on garden leave, we will continue to pay you, that is fully liable to pay as you earn and national insurance. The Delaney versus Richardson case was the case in point, the guidance from the courts. Do we need to review the leave and payments made this year? Were there any paid tax-free? Should tax have been deducted? Were there any payments made in excess of £30,000, where tax should have been deducted on the excess? Perhaps at the basic rate, if the payment was made after the date of leave-in. Was that tax deducted? Was it paid over to HM Revenue and Customs? Those are the sort of payroll year-end checks that we need to make before we close the payroll down, before we do the end-of-year returns.